Next, we have report 2025-163 for 310 Division Street operating model. And both Rebecca and Bill Smith, our homeless service manager, will be able to respond to any questions that you may have. Do you have any comments before we start?
This is just an overview, and so I'm happy to take questions.
Go ahead, Deputy Warden.
So I have just a few questions. Starting with, I know it's you're still working through it all, but I think the first question is really around how I know that there are many different definitions that are out there when it comes to high, low barrier shelters, higher, lower, etc. And so I think that there are members of the public that may not be particularly clear on exactly the kind of approach that's being taken, which is, I think it's a little bit more of a hybrid than the sort of the very clean lines between some of those definitions. So I'm wondering if, in what you bring forward, whether or not there could be an appendix where those definitions could exist in a very clear definition of the approach that's being used in this model is laid out.
Through you, Chair. That's easy enough to do to make some understanding and determinations on what the barriers are and what barriers we're trying to eliminate so more folks can use the service.
Okay. And just related to that would be just the determination of what is high, medium, and low acuity in terms of the clients that may be coming through those doors.
We can add that, absolutely. We currently are using a VI Spadat, so that's our assessment tool. We're also investigating a tool that they're using out of British Columbia, so we're looking at a vulnerable assessment tool that they use and looking at what training would be needed for our area. But we can add the kind of a definition through that as well.
Okay. I also have a question about whether or not the staff at 310 Division are in a position to make any determinations about Form 1 and or whether that's something that would need to be done through the hospital or through the police.
So Form 1 is the police process. Form 2 is community process. So I think they would be in a position, if they had worked with individuals over a period of time, to talk about a change in baseline behaviors, to add to an argument, for lack of a better word, that somebody should be formed.
And
Please continue.
To the best of your knowledge, have there been any clients that have been sent to any Form 1 psychiatric facilities, either in Oshawa or in Peterborough, after they've had that kind of assessment here in community?
To my knowledge, I can't think of any off the top of my head that they've gone through that process. And I don't know that I would actually find out if somebody had gone through that process, if they had been discharged from shelter because they were now in hospital.
I'm just curious to know, I understand privacy and confidentiality, but I'm wondering why we wouldn't know that, because it's,
I think it would be dependent on how that all played out. So if an individual was escalated in the community, and there was a police intervention, and the end result was that they were being put on a 72-hour hold, police would have no obligation to then let the county know or the shelter know that that was the end result for that individual. If Transition House staff or our staff were part of a Form 2 to add context to individuals' baseline behavior changing. We may have some idea, or they may do a follow-up with us at that point, but we wouldn't necessarily find out the end result.
That's it for my questions for the moment, but I have a few more, but I'll let colleagues ask.
Go ahead, Jennifer.
Thank you, Chair. Through you, Chair. I have received a list of questions from Councillor Cleveland, and he just texted saying that he's unable to attend but has asked that I ask the questions on his behalf to, sure. to staff. So,
please go ahead.
Okay. So he has a few here in his list. His first question actually is very similar or almost the same as what the deputy warden asked. It is about having an operational definition of low, moderate, and high acuity clients to provide clarity for council and the community members to better understand who 310 Division Street is servicing and if there could be some hypothetical type examples. So I think that's already been addressed unless you want to elaborate anything on that.
You'll give some examples if there's any there?
I mean, so based on the current assessment tool that we use, we go over things like a history of housing and homelessness, any associated risks, what their socialization and daily functioning looks like, any wellness type questions, so it could be mental health or physical health, and have any of those categories prohibited them from accessing housing or other services. And what we do with those assessments is that creates the baseline for a case plan. So what supports need to be brought in, kind of thing.
Just a quick follow-up. You had mentioned the tool that you were considering from BC. I'm just wondering, do we have a sense of what the reliability and validity of that tool is from the BC context?
We haven't got that far in the details. What we did was a search on assessment tools that other areas were using, and other than the VI Spadat, it was rated in the top three. So now we're just exploring what's involved with us being able to administer that assessment tool.
Is the VI Spadat in the top three or the one from BC?
Both. But okay. VI Spadat is very commonly used specifically in Ontario, but it is nationwide. And it's associated with our HIFAS system.
Thank you. Go ahead, Jennifer.
Councillor Cleveland's second question, again, similar to the one previously asked by the deputy warden, he's asking, can a differentiation be made between high barrier and higher barrier facilities? He states that the community asked for a high barrier facility largely at the town hall, but a higher barrier facility has been mentioned by staff and council. To clarify for the community and council, will the new operational guidelines make 310 a higher barrier facility, and why or why not? So I think we've discussed some of that, unless you want to elaborate further.
I think the struggle is with the words high barrier, because I think a lot of folks take that as the ability to use drugs. And the reality is we look at lowering barriers, and barriers are a multitude of things. It's being accessible, it is having pets, it is being able to go to a shelter with your partner. So those are all the things that lower barriers for a shelter. In fact, when I was researching this, I could not find another model in Ontario, or actually in Canada, and I reached out to a lot of Canadian-wide organizations of anyone operating what they would deem a high barrier shelter. Because the idea of any emergency shelter is to be able to service as many folks as we can. And so in the model that's been created here, we still have eliminated a lot of the shelters, I think, or sorry, we have eliminated a lot of the barriers for folks. I think the increase is we've also removed some of the risks that we were hearing about from community.
Thank you. Go ahead, Jennifer.
The third question from Councillor Cleveland is that individuals will have an assessment done to determine their level of acuity and support required within 48 hours. He's quoting that from the report. He states that the potential two-day delay in assessment opens the door for high acuity short stays, and he wonders how this can be prevented. And then he notes that, again, back to the risk and behaviors in the community, if assessments don't occur faster, are we hosting high acuity clients with your targeted population of moderate and low acuity? And he states not really changing the model.
So through you, Chair, the 48 hours, absolutely, that can be changed. The intention behind that is to make sure that there is a structure in place that within 48 hours, somebody is going to have that initial assessment that is required. And then they're going to move on to case planning. The new model is also based on presentation. So it's not just presentation at intake, it's presentation throughout your stay. So it's not going to be a model where you can, you know, be on your best behavior to get through an intake and then escalate, because that would make you non-eligible for the program.
Thank you. Go ahead, Jennifer.
Councillor Cleveland's fourth question, this one, I did communicate back to him that this is really a request for more information rather than a question. His inquiry is about the fourth floor transitional housing units, and he is saying that it would be helpful to have the program's operational guidelines published or shared with council and the community so that they can get a full picture of the programming at 310 for clarity. For example, policy with respect to allowing guests, curfews, and their use or influence of drugs and alcohol.
Bill, you got a response for that, please?
I can provide an overview of selection process and the programming and the day-to-day.
Okay, thank you.
Councillor Cleveland's fifth question, again, I did follow up with him slightly. This one is he has raised a concern, the comments in the report about the ECE compliance and the staff comment that about enforcement of a strict curfew and eligibility criteria could change the security requirements. Councillor Cleveland made some observations, and he'll be probably bringing that forward. But I think it just really highlights that there needs to be additional discussion with the town of Cobourg, and they may or may not relax their requirements, even though the clients of the shelter are no longer in the community at the times of day. They may still require those elements of their licensing. Question number six from Councillor Cleveland is with respect to the warming hub. He asks, what will that space be used for in the new model? He states, ideally, no programming that allows non-shelter clients to come and go throughout the day and night for service or appointments. This would only contribute to spin-off issues in the surrounding properties and the congregation of people at neighboring sites, is what he states. So, comments from staff.
Thank you, through you, Chair. So, yeah, that is the intention, so that they have already started programming for clients who are currently staying at 310. They're using that space for group work, for programs. If this new model is accepted, then we're also going to do a lot more of the housing-focused type programming in that space. I think there's some intentions for use of the kitchen around training for individuals who are in that space as well. And there has been no discussion about using the space for anyone other than the clients that are utilizing the services.
Thank you, Bill. Any more questions, Jennifer?
That was all of Councillor Cleveland's questions.
Thank you. Any more questions from the committee or council? Before we move forward with the motion, I'll do a final call for delegations from members of the public attending in person or virtually, as we've had a few more members of the public join us. Anyone wish to address any of these questions or part of the agenda? Seeing none, I'll read the resolution. Whereas County Council directed staff at the June 18, 2025 County Council meeting to provide a report at the July 30th, 2025 Social Services Committee meeting regarding the timeline, budget, implementation plan, and operational expectations of transitioning 310 Division Street, Coburg, to a higher barrier shelter that focuses on servicing lower to moderate acuity individuals, and that now therefore be resolved that the Social Services Committee, having considered report 2025-163 for 310 Division Street operating model, recommend that County Council direct staff to proceed with implementing the emergency shelter operational model as outlined in this report and as directed by Council at the June 18, 2025 Council meeting by Council Resolution 2025-06-18522. Mover and a seconder. Moved by Deputy Warden Hankifsky and seconded by Councilor Crate. Any further discussion? All in favor? That's carried.